Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Black House. Leah, how are you doing?
How am I doing?
Oh, yeah.
Am I on?
Yeah, hello. You're very much on.
Oh, okay. Oh, there we go. There we go. It's my headset that's a bit of a mess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, don't worry, I can hear you. We can all hear you.
Cool.
Yeah, because we need to hear you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how's your week been?
Monday was Friday. Friday was Wednesday. It's just been all like meshed up into one. It's like one long day.
Yeah.
It feels like one long day, and it's like one short long day. Run out of time.
Yeah. And the really weird thing for me is that I've never really remembered life. You know, I can remember when I was a teenager and, in my 20s, say.
Yeah.
And nothing seemed to be so crammed as it is now. It's like a day. You got to cram so much into 24 hours.
I think whoever's in charge of time is whoever's in charge. You know,
I think he's reducing.
Yeah, he's reducing it. He's like, you know how
is
you,
it a he?
It must.
I have to ask this question.
It must be.
You think it's a he?
There's a lot of corruption with he's.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so corrupt.
Taking time away from us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like somebody asked me the other day, how's everything going? And I said, well, it depends on which personality class. Ms. ADHD is busy thinking up new plans, new plots, new schemes.
True.
And I was telling you before, Ms. Autism, she's busy filing and just making note, that's gonna crash and burn if you do that, but I'm going to go back to keep filing. I go on filing missions like doom scrolling.
Yeah.
Doom scroll. Like, I just need to file everything. I'm going through my Gmail, my G Drive, my Microsoft Drive, and I'm just, everything's got to get filed because otherwise I can't think. And then you've got Miss PTSD, who wants to shit talk on social media, and,
she doesn't have time.
She doesn't have time for anything. And she does not like the idea of, the FBI thing. All I'm thinking about with the FBI here is COINTELPRO, and are they going to mess with my Sheen time, my Temu time? you're actually targeting aunties that grew up on hose water and neglect and secondhand stores, and now we've got debit cards and there's Sheen that is so much cheaper than New Zealand. And this guy's here. Mm-hmm. You're picking on a whole generation of women that are already angry. Just don't. Do yourself a favor, Cash. Don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is our soft girl era. Sheen is our soft girl era.
No. They don't want you to have that soft girl era.
Well, we're going to take it with you like in a night.
Okay.
And then I've got Miss Anxiety who wakes up the next day and go, they're probably listening to everything you say on your phone and your smart TV.
Yeah, it's all right. Let them listen. For me, I always said something. I actually was a victim of hacking last week, last Saturday night.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What was it? Was it app?
Someone took over my WhatsApp and my South African SIM card and, So that's... That's what it was. So actually, everything that I sort of own online was linked to that number. So as it was happening, I'm busy out on a dash there, and I'm busy, I just see this message popping up on my phone. Are you trying to change your WhatsApp to a different device? I'm like, no, don't allow. So, And then a few seconds later, another message appears. But differently worded, but sort of the same thing again.
Ooh.
Deny, man. I'm not doing this. And funny thing is, I had my password for my two-factor authentication as 123456.
No, you never do that. Craig.
That's just like putting a little knick-knack or a little chip in the door to say, listen, I'm closing, I'm locking with this thing. But... Mm-hmm. At that point in time, because the first time I did it, it was just like, okay, WhatsApp is just bothering me to do this. Let me just put this because I'm not going to remember the password.
Yeah.
And then now things started to get real. I'm just like, oh, damn, let me change this thing now before they actually get into my WhatsApp.
Mm.
I changed it quickly. And after I changed it quickly, I think it was about probably 20 minutes later. Mm. I'm on a phone call. I'm on a WhatsApp call. And boop, WhatsApp is no longer registered on this device. I'm just like, what? So they actually took my number and didn't really...
No.
They tried to get into my WhatsApp, but because I changed the two-factor authentication thing, they haven't been able to enter it.
Hey, that two-factor authentication thing's so important, eh?
Yeah, it's very important, so that we need to take that thing very seriously, so that at least if they do take over your SIM card or anything, then all you have to deal with is the network operator. Now, funny thing is, I'm dealing with the network operator to say, listen, there's all my things in South Africa linked to that.
Yeah.
I'm telling them over I think it was over X, because there's a customer care line.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, no, you need to walk into a branch. And I'm like, okay.
A branch where? A branch of WhatsApp?
A branch in South Africa for MTN. I'm just like, dude, I'm telling you, this is happening now.
Yeah.
And I'm out of the country for like another few months at least. You cannot. I'm like, okay, it's cool. The scammers have won.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm like, okay, cool, thanks. I don't need your sympathy.
So you just have to set up a new WhatsApp on a different number.
Yeah.
It's a pain, but you can carry it with you everywhere.
Yeah, I'm kind of over it though.
Yeah,
I just don't like giving out a new number. I've been known for consistency. I've had that number for like 15 years.
Oh, you like me with filing?
Yeah, I've had that number for 15 years, so I'm not about to start distributing a new number. But at least I secure all my social media, everything else, two-factor authentication for everything, and just haven't checked my PayPal.
You know, like,
there's not much to steal from me.
I mean, like, and I always think people that go for the lowest, you know, lowest hanging fruit when it comes to, you know, economics and stuff like that, they're just lazy thieves.
Yeah, very lazy.
I mean, like, if you're really any good at anything, why aren't you stealing from
Elon?
Elon's steal
there,
from
man.
Somebody come who's on. Got money, and his money is insured.
And then you can come give it to me.
Yeah.
Because, like, okay.
Like, what happened to those kind of? Like, I thought that's what hackers were supposed to be. They were supposed to be Robin Hoods.
We have such lazy thieves these
days.
They're
lazy.
You know, funny thing is also an associate that I've actually been working with last year, she had the same thing happen 2 hours before it happened to me. So when when they took over her number, they actually started sending messages to everyone in her contacts and, you know, hey, can you please send me 3,000? My account has been logged. You know, that sob message. I'm just like, nah. Her and I don't have such a relationship to be asking for such an amount of money. I mean, 3,000 is like $300.
Right.
I'm just like, we've never asked each other for money. We've just been strictly work basis. So I phoned another associate and said, listen, hey, she's been hacked. Please let her know just in case she doesn't know. Yeah. Not knowing that 2 hours later, I'll be the one who's, you know.
Right. So did this all come in a message on WhatsApp first? Did you open a message on WhatsApp?
No, I didn't open a WhatsApp. It was literally just a notification.
Oh.
Yeah, like, you know, when you just change your WhatsApp from one device to another, it alerts the old device to say, are you the one trying to change from this device to a new device?
Yeah.
And very easily, I actually saw that the guys are using a Samsung S10. And I was like, okay.
You don't use that?
I mean, why use a device that can be traced? If I was going to be a hacker, I would use I think it's called a Symbiotic app or something. I used to use it on my laptop when I lost my phone at some point.
Right.
So you literally install Android onto your phone, onto your laptop.
Right.
And then you can have your WhatsApp on there.
Right, yeah,
but it
doesn't
say that it'll just say an Android device.
Yeah.
Not a Samsung S10. Because now, if I catch you as the hacker and you've got an S10, I'm like, oh, okay. There you go.
That's
the phone. I mean, you're just giving yourself.
They're getting out of control, but they are lazy.
Very lazy.
Like, talking about being detectives, we've got a lot of detectives out there at the moment looking for a very large truck.
Yeah.
Thank you, people. Mm-hmm. I think it's like the amount of people that have gotten back and said, we got our eyes open, and that's really cool. And, you know, that's a really hard thing that happened. Like, our guy, I won't say names, but people know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, he's put a lot of money into trying to get his business off the ground, wants to get home, see his mom and all that sort of stuff. And this is a major blow and a major cost. So,
it is.
You know, all the people that have been responding over the last couple of days to the poster and stuff like that, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you see something, say something, as they say.
What are we looking out for?
We're looking out for a very large truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, got flogged over the weekend.
Okay, from where, can we say location?
P-Town.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
it's
community
getting out of hand, man.
It's getting out of hand, but like I, you know, this is not my first rodeo with recession times in New Zealand. And as I recall, the last recession I went through in the early 90s, that was pretty wild. It was a bit like the Wild West for a while there.
Yeah.
So anybody who's my age probably can look around and go, oh yeah, we've been here before with the same government policies and the same austerity measures. We've seen it all before, and the thing that comes from that is stress and anxiety and crazy behavior.
And for everyone who's my age, learn from those who've come before us.
Yeah,
and take.
We're X-Gen was raised on neglect and hose water, so we're the ones that never really got older than 35 mentally.
Yeah.
But you know. We've seen a lot in our lifetime, you know, the onset of computers, which I clearly recall saying when I was in my fifth form year in high school, oh, those will never catch on. And skipping out to the back of the netball courts, you know, but, you know, we've watched it go from Star Trek, flip, beam us up, Scotty, to mobile phones.
Yes.
Right? We've seen the whole gamut. We know what it was like before these things even existed. So
we've seen mobile phones moving from something that was so huge to so small. Like, I can't remember.
Like you, and you still say huge with the palm of your hand. I remember them carrying a battery, and it was a freaking brick.
It was a brick. Yeah. Yeah, I remember. I remember the brick. You know, I think it was the 1610, the Nokia 1610.
Oh,
yeah, that was
like I'm talking this with a massive aerial.
Oh no, no, oh yeah. I was still like probably a baby then.
Yeah.
And then when I was,
and that was crazy because you'd see them standing around in the fancy parts of Auckland, like Parnell, and they'd be all in their slick suits and stuff, and they'd be standing with this massive suitcase that looked like that was the battery, and this huge thing that looked like, you know, those phones when you're in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, yeah, the satellite phone.
Like a satellite phone.
It did.
And like, I remember seeing that and going, you guys are weirdos.
But that was the flex then.
Yeah, that was the flex.
That was such a flex. And then I think and then it came to the iPhone being a flex at some point.
Yeah.
Now it's just like a phone. It's just like, okay, cool. Yeah. You got one. Got one too.
So.
Story time. Let's get into story time.
But before we get into story time, we got two community events tonight.
There's one
happening at, starting at 5 p.m. today out at Johnsonville Community Center, Frankmore Ave. It's Petronio Alvarez Festival. Curated by Remate or Remati. I don't know if it's Remate or Remati. I'm putting a bit of marketing on that. Remate or Remati New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it is the Afro-Colombian community.
Okay.
So that's starting at 5 today at the community center. So it's probably going to go on till 10 or 11. I don't know what time the community centers have to shut down. And they're going to have some live performances as well as DJs and what have you. And then they've got tonight at El Barrio, we've got DJ Daza and KB the DJ and Collier's Afrocentrics presenting Afro City. $10 at the door, but not for the Black House crew. From 10 p.m. till 4 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, so get down there. And yeah, me and Vera have been working hard on this.
And the guys know how to party. Let me add.
Yeah.
Because the last time I went to a party there, I couldn't stand.
You couldn't stand?
I couldn't stand.
So you've been in the El Barrio.
I remember Cole taking me. I just remember handing him my phone and saying, just tell me when the Uber's here. And I was sitting on the pavement.
When
the Uber got here, he's like, yeah, Craig, your Uber's here. I'm like, okay, take me there.
Where was this?
At El Barrio.
Oh, no way.
I have so... That traumatized me because I've never been like that. And all Dave had to say was, you should watch out when you're partying with Cole. I'm like, yeah, true that. And then he says to me, are we going next week? I'm like,
really?
You say I must watch out. And then you say, are we going next week?
We're going again.
Come on, man.
So that's tonight. Afrocentric presents Afro City. DJ Dozen, KB the DJ, Collier's. We got what? Afro Beats, Amapiano.
Yeah.
The whole gamut.
Yeah.
So, and nothing's been happening in Wellington much.
Yeah, yeah, it's just been quite chilled. There's so much electoral down DMD that's been happening. Mm. I mean, I work around the town, so being seeing, you know, all these clubs so crowded, especially 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
Yeah, that pay weekend.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy, but yeah. So tonight is going to be something that's going to be wonderful.
And I was just going to jump in. Me and Vera have been working really hard on a special little thing.
Okay.
Scintilla got back to us. Scintilla Shanghai. We're working on it. But my week has been insane with 5 a.m. My brain. I felt like my brain was on fire this week. I mean, even putting this together for today, up till 5 a.m. So let's get into it. Or you want to go to a music break first, and then we get into it. What do you reckon?
I think let's get into it.
Let's get into it first,
and then we can do the music after.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So last time we were here, we were talking about the Steelers and when that 1780s. When the ceiling scene begins, and not long after the Whalers started coming down. So we talked briefly about Thomas Chaslin, who was the son of an Aboriginal woman and a convict father who was African. That's what the reports say. And of course, you gotta remember when you're doing this sort of research online, there's a lot of things that are in archives that sometimes aren't digitized, so you can't get to it.
Yes.
But then, and also there's lots of reference to books, but you can't get to the whole context of things. So what I'm able to get digitally, I've been doing. And considering I crammed this.
Those are the pieces that we have to work with.
Yeah,
so
we have to literally
create a mental puzzle.
Yeah.
So to speak, yeah.
So he got Tommy Chaslin, or what was his other name? We had another name for him last week. It was what was his name? Chaslin.
Wait, I had it.
Yeah. Let me just scroll down.
You know when you're afraid to say something because you think it might be a swear word in Maori? And
yeah.
Keep quiet.
But he had his own, here he is. Tommy Titirini.
I had a K-I.
Yeah.
Instead of an N-I.
Yeah, so his dad was, in the reports that I found, was reported as being an African convict.
Yeah.
When sometimes in these things when they say African, they could mean Caribbean, it could mean anywhere else in that whole British slavery project, right? And British penal colony project. And so Tommy Chaslin Jr., his mum was Indigenous Australian. So he became known as one of the best sailors and whalers in New Zealand, actually. He had really good eyesight. We talked about that. He was really, you know, he was very adept at his job. Working at the bottom of the South Island, and we had a look at the maps of where all those little islands
are.
Yeah.
Where you really need to zoom.
Yeah. You have to zoom in to see them.
It gives you a different perspective about the world, actually, because, you know, we always look at these big continents, how many continents do we have in the world?
Don't ask me.
Yeah,
so now you ask me questions on the spot later.
I know, I'll be one of the worst teachers when it comes to, you know, like geography and stuff like that, because I actually just throw in all those questions that I also don't know the answers to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But
neither do your teachers. But, you know, like these whaling stations were like popping up all over the country, and let me just put my glasses back on. You know, you got places, Preservation Inlet in 1829, Tory Channel, Cook Strait, late 1820s, Bay of Islands, which keeps coming up over and over and over again in the research that I'm doing about whalers, right? And, you know, and also Fovo Strait, Codfish Island communities being mixed, very multicultural. And many whalers, of course, had relationships with Māori women and formed mixed families and cultural connections. But also it sparked, there was a lot of conflicts that often happened between whaling communities and local people as well. And, you know, some of the stuff is quite brutal. I mean, you know, when we looked at what happened to the guy Swilly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is, there was cannibalism here in New Zealand. So, you know, the ferocity of it was quite, you know, I sort of think, wow. If somebody was to take just the times of the Sealers and the Whalers and what was going on then, that would be an action movie, like Wild West stuff.
Why hasn't that happened?
I don't know. But there's so many elements in that to me is just, I find it really, because I start thinking, what would it have been like to have been there in that time? Or not so much be the whaler, but just to be, an Indigenous person here, but just being in that environment, which is so frontier-like, right?
Move makers, please take note. I actually saw some students shooting, I think it was on Cuba Street. When was it? About two nights ago. Yeah, so take note, guys. This is a movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we're tired of
It's an action movie.
We're tired of the whole Shaka Zulu and whatever movies, you know, that's been over.
But New Zealanders have this quite schizophrenic relationship to the whole transatlantic slave trade and what was going on there, and you know, our relationship and involvement with it, even if it was peripheral, but we weren't really that peripheral, because when you think about colonialism without the transatlantic British slave trade, it wouldn't really have been able to have happened, because it's what paid for it all.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, you know, as I'm scrolling through and, you know, deep diving, I'm looking for specifically African Caribbean whalers that touched shore in New Zealand. And the strange thing is, when I'm looking at New Zealand records, it won't give you anything. You literally have to go offshore. You have to go to maritime archives, and you have to go into records that aren't here, because for some reason we've made it look like that the whaling industry was this very European thing, when it wasn't. It was very multicultural, and you know, the whalers that were coming down from America and that, slaves running away from slavery, or freedmen wanting just to get off the land, because being on the land in America was just as dangerous after slavery as it was during slavery. So to become a whaler,
still dangerous today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, slavery is always dangerous. but I mean, like, during that time of when they went from it being part of their industrial makeup to it being sort of outlawed, or you're not allowed to do it anymore, it was still dangerous. It wasn't like, oh, everybody just got over it and worked along. We're all happy, happy little people together.
We all love to have these, you know, beautiful transitions and stuff like that. We act like it's a movie, and you know, it's cutting from one shot to the next, you know, fading to the next. No, it didn't happen that way.
So I found this one, William Tucker, and he was called...
What's his story?
Well, he sailed from Hobart on the 12th of November, 1817. It was a sailing voyage, but this place where they were at was also a whaling area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we're in that transition period of when you had sailors, whalers, kind of like, first there were sailors, then there were sailors and whalers together. So they sailed down, anchored in Port Daniel on the southeast side, the southern part of New Zealand. And on the 11th of December, the place where they'd been, where they landed, Europeans had only appeared within the last 7 years. So they hadn't had much contact with Europeans.
Right.
The master, Mr. Kelly, and his boat crew went ashore the same day, met with a friendly reception, and which they attributed to the knowledge the latter had of one of the crew, named William Tucker. So William Tucker had been to New Zealand before.
Oh, okay.
And he was Creole. They said the colonial accounts say he was a black man, or possibly Creole or Lascar. And he worked as a sailor in Otago Harbour in the 1810s. And he was known to Naitahu as Wairi. But when I'm looking at the spelling of that, that's transliteration. So that's not, Wairi is not a Māori word. That's how an English ear translated what they heard.
And what would it be?
Well, I was trying to think of all the ways that, like, if I'm looking at W-I-O-Y-O-R-E-E, I'm looking at that as like Y Audi or Y Auri.
Okay.
Or, and then I thought Paroni, because that's brown.
Yeah.
Right? But then I spelled it a little different, Y Hauri.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, listen, I am not a fluent Māori speaker. I'm using Māori translation services, okay? So if anybody has a better idea about what this transliteration could have meant, but I got to Waihauri, and like Waihauri, that means wastewater. And I was thinking, could that have been a kind of derogatory slur?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Maybe they were calling him that because they had a plan, and the plan was when these guys all came ashore and they met with the chief and the people in the village where they anchored in that area, which was Port Daniel. They went to go and trade some potatoes and stuff, and the local people were greeting this guy Wairi, and basically they were quite friendly, bring him in, and the next minute they were surrounded.
Oh.
They were surrounded and they were all attacked, and the captain and all that took off back to the beach. I'm just gonna abbreviate because I've got the thing. I can post it up later. I can send it to you if you want to read it.
Yeah.
But they all took off to the beach, got onto the, you know, the little, what do you call them, dinghies to get back out to the ship. The captain got dragged along in the surf because they're trying to get away. And as he's yelling out to Tucker, Tucker's going, "Don't leave me, don't leave me, don't leave me." And he's getting butchered because what the plan was to take the ship. So they, I think, and they were greeted by a Lascar. Remember I told you the Lascars could be, it's kind of ambiguous, but it also included, they could have come from Northeast Africa, some of these guys, because the whaling ships went all around that area and they came down to Australia and then down to the Pacific. So people were getting picked up on whaling ships. Intercontinental travel.
Yeah.
So this guy, when they got to the village before they got surrounded, they were met by this Lascar who had been abandoned there about a few years before. He was just left behind, and he was on the brig called the Matilda. But he spoke Māori.
Oh yeah.
Right. So, and he said, "Oh, I can do the negotiations for you," but it looks like from the story that the setup was already there. Well, the next time they come, we're taking the boat. So when these guys jumped on their dinghy, the captain saw poor William Tucker, he's gone. He's taken. And they've gotten to their brig, but already on their brig, there's about 50 men.
Yeah.
They're on it, all over the boat. They're going to take it. And, of course, there's a massive, massive scrap. People got shot. People got thrown off the side, yada-da, yada-da. And I think at the end, this story, they actually, that particular crew killed the chief. And so things just erupted. And these guys went back and burned everything down and took off. Yeah. So, you know, like, it's quite, you know, like, every time I'm coming across these really early stories, I'm like, God damn, it was brutal.
It was indeed.
It was brutal. But there's a whole write-up about that. And, you know, they said that this guy, William Tucker, Wairi, was probably Creole Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
So from that, I'm just making educated guess that even though he may not have, well, Creole or Lascar, yeah, he's probably a convict. Mm-hmm. He's probably a convict that's gotten on from Hobart and come down to New Zealand, because remember that area, they, after they cleaned out all the seals and stuff there, that's when a lot of sealers started coming down from Hobart to New Zealand. So yeah, exciting times in New Zealand. They're just knocking us off like nobody's business. And then the next person, which was really hard to get information about him, except that he was from New Bedford. Mm-hmm. He was listed as Black New Bedford, and he was Joseph Filianung. And he was in the New Bedford Whaling Museum crew list database, and he was a seaman aboard the Canton Packet, which was it was a whaling ship. So at this time, this is 1843. So I'm not staying in lineal lines, because like going from like 1790, I'm sort of jumping across there. Because it's what you can find. And I wanted to actually get stuff where I could go, okay, here's what they've said, and let's go and find the actual document if we can. But some of the documents, like, they aren't digitized.
Yeah.
Some are, and then there's a lot of people who are doing... What's really interesting is that people are actually saying, you know, we know from the records, from the colonial records, that New Zealand was multicultural, but not enough people have actually written about the multiculturalness of it. And, you know, that always, you know, to me it's like, we've got this history that says there was a lot more people coming here than Europeans, right? During that pre-Treaty of Waitangi Day, mm-hmm. when it was whalers and sailors, and it was Wild West frontier, like, and there weren't really rules. The only rules were, you know, well, there were rules, but those rules were indigenous rules. They weren't the rules that say if you'd come on a whaling ship, you'd necessarily understand what the rules are.
Yeah.
That would be indigenous rules from here. And I think that adds a whole another level, you know. It is very Wild West like, and but we're telling the story, like, I think what our history is telling a story is like how what they did in America, where they changed what it was actually like for Indian people and what those Indian people actually looked like.
Yeah.
You know, because we know that American Indians that we understand from the Hollywood version are not what all American Indian or Native Indians or Indigenous Americans look like. A lot of them were black as well.
It reminds me of this picture that I always see. They always had this...
The feather
and all that stuff on their heads. And just like, okay, cool, was it?
Well,
what was it about that?
I don't know. I don't know that much about, like, the traditions of American Indian people. But what I have learned, and it was a real, what is it called when you, cognitive dissonant moment for me, mm-hmm. was when I learned that not all what we understand as African American people actually have histories from Africa.
True.
They were indigenous Americans that were also black people. And in our colonized understanding of what America wanted to tell us is their history. Mm-hmm. So what you learn through, I don't know, watching Hollywood movies, we think American Indians all look a particular way.
Yeah.
But, and we don't think that, okay, what was going on was you had people coming and invading that land. You had the system of slavery, international slavery going on. you had black people and people of different ethnic makeups, in the sense that physically they look different, but one group looks more like slaves, mm-hmm. more like the slaves you're taking from Africa. So they were sending those slaves off. They were driving them off their land. And the difference between, say, civil rights and indigenous rights is an issue of land.
I mean, it's very simple. It's a simplistic way of trying to look at things, just to try and, you know, with the human mind, we always just try and get the simplest way to, you know, categorize and say, okay, this is this. This is what looks like this. This is how it should look like. This is how it should behave. Mm. And I think that's kind of how the world sort of wants us to look at things.
Yeah.
Hence why you have all these hidden histories. When it comes to the multiculturalism of New Zealand, because yeah. The moment that you open that can of worms, I call it a can of worms being very careful to say that. It's yeah. because once you say that, there's always a sort of battle to say, oh, okay, I want to claim my piece of the pie as a descendant of this culture in this multicultural state.
Mm.
Yeah, just like how if we look at Africa and we say the ongoing battles now in terms of we come from this region, you come from that region,
yeah.
why are you in this region? You can't inherit this region because we are from this region.
Yeah.
We are of this region.
Yeah.
So we always want to make it so simplistic to say, make it seem like there was no movement.
There was no movement yeah. and everything was static.
And that's exactly what we are seeing in this particular instance when it comes to the whalers, because like, okay, yeah. well, we had one guy, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, and what I've been reading from other people who are interested, they're saying there needs to be more research and investigation and deep sort of like looking at this, because the black people, whether they're Caribbean or African, but for the sake of like not having to say it all over and over and over again, if you're a Afro heritage person yeah. from the whether you got here through convict slavery or convict transportation or whaling or sealing, they are mentioned in the histories,
yeah.
but there's nothing said about them. Right. So, and even when we get on to what happens after the whalers, mm-hmm. you know, black people are mentioned throughout our, but then it's like no, nothing more. We're not going to say anything more. And so this is why I'm really, I really am passionate about doing this
mm-hmm.
and reading more and spending more time on it without having to do multiple things at the same time. So because when I can see somebody that has heritage like mine in our history, then history becomes important to me.
Yeah.
When I'm thinking history is just one or the other and everything else has been, why are we doing that? Why are we, you know, like, it's not like, who is it a threat to? Is it a threat to colonization? Who is it a threat to, really, to say that New Zealand was multicultural? We've been multicultural the whole time.
I mean, let's leave it on that thought as we go into the music break. I think we should dance just a little bit.
I think so. I need to dance, man. That's what my massage is. Shake it off.
We've been going. It's like 20 to the hour of
four. Oh, gosh. Well, that's good because, you know, I wanted to keep it sort of light and tight.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted, Craig.
So I'm a person who really loves, you know, these new songs, so to speak. You know,
you got some Bacardi.
Let me take it to one of those.
Something that makes me jump up and down. Are you
and funny enough, the song is called Skit and Jump. This is Molest, Fungay and Gweje with Lim Crazy, and it's called Skit and Jump.
Oh no, I'm...
I'll tell you when, I'm a read your way. Go! I read your way. I'll tell you when, I'm a read your way. Go! I read your way. Quiero que lo
I never know how to say these names, but I think it's called Moleste Nvanke. Wait. Lim Crazy. I know Lim Crazy. Lim Crazy, yeah. Lim Crazy is the one that I know on this one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Skit and Jump.
Skit and Jump.
Yeah. I don't even know what Skit and Jump means. Please don't ask me.
I'm not. I'm going to just ask one of Cole's. You going to play it tonight?
I think so. You might.
I don't play. I plan to go and nod, say, do my whole auntie thing and then... and then bounce home to bed.
Do my whole auntie thing.
Yeah.
What's the whole auntie thing?
The whole auntie thing is I got to get in. I can't pay. I'm broke. And somebody nice got to buy me a drink. And then I'm going
to
go home.
Funny thing is that I think I have to prime myself to actually have a drink.
Yeah.
To be honest, I really, really can't have a drink these days. It's just weird.
I don't know. I think it's the winter thing. Everybody's going into hibernation and stuff. You know, everybody's just like, oh, so much effort.
It's too much effort.
So, okay, where were we? We were at Joseph Filiyanang. Mm-hmm. And they think that, you know, it was recorded at New Zealand on the 8th of October, 1843. I just want to say, you know, these are just a few names. You know, a lot of documentation, unless you get to Colonial Archives and you're able to get into these books, which, and records, which may mean you have to travel overseas.
Yes.
Right? If they're not digitized, well, you can only go by what you can pull up. Digitally, and I just really like to dig into it.
Or maybe you link up with other academics, like-minded academics, overseas.
Yeah.
That's the only other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, because traveling, we know, hey.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
But Bay of Islands was a collision zone anyway between Christian missionaries like Henry Williams and of course the transient whaling crews who brought liquor, weapons, diseases, notorious incidents including violent clashes, thefts and retaliation raids. Some black and mixed race whalers were remembered in missionary journals for their seamanship and skill, but also for their role in the port's lawlessness. Now, I've read stories about the Bay of Islands just being like Sodom and Gomorrah back then. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, this is movie stuff. This is just epic movie, multicultural insanity and craziness of those eras and blood and guts and action, you know, and that's, I love that type of stuff. I'm really basic like that. But, you know, while Māori oral histories suggest that William T. Shorey, also known as Black Ahab, now he's a very famous whaler from, he was based out of San Francisco with Persian Pacific Voyages. You know, oral histories, they, you know, like sometimes oral histories aren't recorded. And because the way that these whalers moved around the globe, the chances of them being here or not being here is like 50-50, right? So wasn't able to come up with actual evidence that he was.
Yeah.
But I don't discount oral histories because a lot of our histories are oral histories, you know what I mean? They're not always recorded by the right missionary or the right whaling captain or the right whatever to make it into the archives that we want to see.
First of all, sometimes when they don't understand something in that history, they won't record it.
Yeah.
Just like if I don't understand something, I'll just turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah.
Act like it's not there.
So, Māori oral histories suggest William T. Shorey actually touched base in the Bay of Islands. I mean, if anybody has more information on that from Māori community, I'd love to hear about it.
We are all about collaboration and integrating information that we hear because we don't know it all.
We don't know it all. And it's funny,
And that's the mistake people make. They think that, okay, cool, these people are on the airwaves, you know. Mm. Oh, the voice of reason, the voice of, you know, knowledge.
I'm just making faces at Craig right now. I do. I'm passionate about this.
I actually just thought of myself and I'm just like,
Someone
thinks I'm the knowledge. I'm like, yeah, the oracle. No, guys, we don't know it all.
We don't know it all, but we're passionate about finding out, right?
Exactly.
We want to know.
Even better when we have listeners tuning in and saying, listen, I know a bit about this.
Look.
I've read somewhere, I've got information about this. I can send you an article about this, which is interesting. They can send us through on the email.
Yep. The Blackhouse, 106.1 FM@gmail.com. Robbie Shilliam, I found some old emails. I reached out. He wrote Black Pacific. If he's listening, if he tunes in at all, and you have any information, I know you know stuff, send it through to us. And yeah, we'd love to have you on the radio show too.
I just had to plug that on in the email. Yeah.
But you know what? We have had some messages. I got a lovely message from my friend Margaret, Caribbean New Zealander.
Yeah.
And Caribbean Māori, actually. And she said, I've been loving your show.
Yeah.
And like, this is what we're talking about because of the black, the British convict model, slave model. This is a story about not just Africans, Cape Verdeans, Caribbean, all those Bermuda, Barbados, Jamaica. This is a history that connects us down here in New Zealand. And the more that we are included, the happier I'll be.
Exactly.
I am on a mission.
It's funny because when you talk about inclusion in everything, when it comes to New Zealanders and even just the from a cultural perspective.
Mm.
Okay, cultural perspective aside, let me say, just New Zealand in the grand scheme of things when it comes to the world. It's just like New Zealand is that side. I know we are that side when it comes to the world.
Yeah.
But let's not try and
cut
off like New Zealand and say like, you're just that side.
That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Is that I think there's a psyche, there's a mentality here that we have think about ourselves as we are so remote from everything else.
Yeah. I mean, geographically, yes, we may be, guys. It's like a 19-hour flight.
But even going through these histories, we're not.
No.
We weren't. Because
not at all.
There wasn't just Americans and British in these industries. There was French, Portuguese. There was, Portuguese, Pacific, yeah. Azorium, Cape Verdean crew members from Portuguese Atlantic Islands frequently crewed Pacific whale ships that reached New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
These are men of color. These are African men.
Yeah.
You know, we had West Indian. They were on these ships and they were coming down here and there were hundreds and hundreds of these ships. We're not the first Africans to get here, guys. Like, they've been here before, and that's, you know, Cape Verdeans were common in 19th century American whaling ships from New Bedford and Nantucket. Yeah. Right? So they're just a few characters. I needed, you know, like, I've had a full on week. My brain's been on fire for a week. I've been going to bed on average at 4 a.m. because of these other projects that we're working on.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I had to do a quick cram to get everything in for today. But, you know, like, we can come back next week and I'll be a bit more, my brain will be a little more massaged, you know, and I'll be able to, like, flesh it out a little bit more. But, you know, where are we at? 551. You know, 352.
Yeah.
another big name that's come up. And the only reason I'm going to mention him is because when I first saw a play about this guy, he talked about traveling to Australia. And so when you're saying you're traveling to Australia, you might as well say you're coming to New Zealand as well, especially in those days. And this is Absalom Boston. And he was an African-American born around 1785 in Nantucket and became the first black captain of a whale ship with an all-black crew. And you know, the black whalers that were coming out of this area of America, a lot of them, there were a few of these black sea captains that had all black crews. And they were traveling down this way. I'd like to get into the actual archives and, you know, see, like, did they touch base at Chatham Islands? You know, or was it one of those little bits around the bottom of the south, those little rocks down the bottom of the south? You know what I mean?
You know, when you say those bits of rocks, I'm just like, really, Leah? Really? They do look like bits of
rock. They do look like bits of rock.
But I'm just imagining that bit of rock is quite big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's an island, but, you know, can you imagine being left there for like 6 months, 8 months? You have to build your own cover. You have to find your own food.
I mean, this opens me up to the modern day perspective when it comes to islands, people purchasing islands and stuff like that.
Mm.
Why could this, if this history is being hidden so much, could it be just to preserve your sort of investment?
For them rich elite?
Yeah, to say, hey.
That's mine.
I don't want you knowing the history of this thing.
Yeah, I want that. Subantarctic island with the only animals that come there are seals. Yeah, I want that.
Yeah. I mean, it does make sense at some point. Because,
probably.
Yeah, because, I mean, what's the reason to hide all this history?
I know.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's weird because it's not like it's completely hidden, but it's not talked about. And then when I think about, like, why don't you want to talk about the black men that were working with the Europeans that were coming here? Why don't you want to talk about that? Why don't you want to say who they were? Why don't you want to investigate more? I do. I want to. Well, I'm interested.
Yeah, that's because if you find out it's your granddad or your great granddad, you're going to go and claim that island.
Listen, don't even get me started.
That's your island, Ilya. That's your island.
Yeah.
You're going to have a private island of your
it'll
own.
It'll be the Afro Kiwi takeover for real. Like, don't you say only your relatives were like from the UK?